Hear ye, hear ye. May this court of the popcorn counter be opened. Is that what they say? What do they say?
It's in session, isn't it?
In session, thank you.
In session. Court. Kind of, I've tried to set the popcorn counter up as a courtroom.
You've done a lovely job. There's just the right amount of popcorn on the counter. I think you've got 11 pieces of popcorn, kernels. So we have a jury.
I was starting to assemble a proper jury, but then people all left to go and see the film. So it's just you and me now. Having seen two legal movies this week, I feel it's only fair that we should have a trial of our own, I think. I have a problem with courtroom drama insofar as I think it's essentially not cinematic. It's like it's people talking in rooms, isn't it? Like it lends itself to plays or to TV. When I was a child, I think just before, after the children's programs on TV at lunchtime, there used to be this very low budget British drama called Crown Court.
Oh.
And that's what I always think of as kind of legal drama. It's kind of cheap, wobbly scenery, Crown Court, with actors that you never see in any other shows appearing for 1 week as someone who stole £5 from a wallet or something. like Judge Judy, you know, Night Court. It's, you know, this is kind of what you know, legal drama is. It's not really kind of cinematic. You know, movies are about telling a story with moving pictures. You know, the dialogue is sort of almost background noise in a good film. Whereas for a courtroom drama, it's all dialogue, isn't it? Dialogue and wigs.
I'm confused. I thought you were going to defend courtroom dramas as good cinema. You're not
that's
doing
because we
very
tossed
good
a coin before the audience came in. We tossed a coin about who was going to defend courtroom movies.
Who is
and
there
I had
to speak
defend.
For the courts? Who's going to defend the courts? Oh my god!
But like any good lawyer, I accept the case of whoever is paying the bill at the end of the day.
Good point.
So we are going to have a hearing about whether courtroom dramas are. They are accused of the crime of being dull and uncinematic, but I've flipped the coin, so I have to defend courtroom dramas. So I'm going to defend courtroom dramas, pretend that they are good. And there have been some good courtroom films, so it's not like I'm a complete turncoat. Whereas you have to convince me that that courtroom dramas are bad, which probably won't be hard.
No.
But we have lined up some witnesses at least.
Okay. Yeah, witnesses for the defense. These are your witnesses.
So I think we should call our witnesses one at a time.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to call the first witness for the defense.
Okay.
First witness for the defense is going to be Henry Fonda in a Sidney Lumet film. Did we decide is it Lumet or Lumet? It's Lumet.
Sidney Lumet, I think, yes.
Sidney Lumet, right, okay, yeah. One day I will pronounce all the words on the podcast correctly, but that day is not today. No. I'm still going to be asking you for advice. 12 Angry Men. We mentioned it last week, 1957. It's kind of like, I was going to say that like the first big courtroom drama, but actually not a lot of it happens in a courtroom. It's
precisely, yeah.
It's very play-like because it's based on a play, I think, isn't it? Or based on a teleplay, I think.
Yeah.
Which then got promoted to the big screen.
Yeah.
Henry Fonda and 11 other white men. I think they're all men on the jury, aren't they? Is that right?
They are. Yes. Yep.
Yep. And it starts out with everybody but Henry Fonda wanting to send the plaintiff down as guilty, and gradually through the force of his personality and logical argument, he brings everyone around to his way of thinking, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. But I think there's a big hole here, and you've already mentioned it. This is not a courtroom film; it's a jury room film.
It's a courtroom adjacent movie.
It's the ante room. Right after the side, So that's.
I mean, it's just a good legal drama.
Okay.
But I agree. Okay, but fair enough. I may have to concede that it doesn't actually happen in a courtroom. All right, clever clogs.
Yeah.
Well, bring in a witness for the prosecution then. Show me a bad courtroom movie.
Witness for the prosecution. Boy, we could end this with 12 Angry Men because I think that makes both cases ultimately. Well, we could talk about Michael Clayton. You've got Michael Clayton here. Which I think it was a pretty good movie. And but how much of it really happens in the courtroom, I guess? Because I remember that as having a pretty satisfying ending that happens outside the courtroom, really, right? The Tilda Swinton character ultimately gets busted outside the courtroom.
Yeah, it's kind of legal maneuvering, isn't it, in that film?
It is legal maneuvering more than it's courtroom.
I had never seen it until a couple of years ago, and having heard so much about it, I was tremendously disappointed. Actually, I found it very boring, Michael Clayton.
Yeah, I think it's a great film. I think it's a pretty good film, but maybe courtroom. Boy, I'm changing my mind. Maybe courtroom movies are good.
There you have it, folks. Both the lawyers agree. I mean, there is one film that I've put on this list that we've shared of courtroom movies, good and bad, which I know that both of us have fallen asleep in.
Oh, really?
I've tried to watch it twice and fallen asleep both times. I saw it once at the ICA and then once with you, I think, at film school, which is Close Up by Abbas Kiarostami.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah.
So this is I still don't understand the reverence for this film. It was held up to us at film school as an excellent example of the art of cinema.
Yeah.
In it, as far as I can remember from my two sort of half-slept through viewings, it's about this guy who pretends to be Abbas Kiarostami, the Iranian film director.
Yeah.
And then, you know, is sort of caught out and taken to court for fraud, I think, although I'm not entirely sure what the crime was or what it was that he got away with. I don't know whether it was from some free snacks or a discount at a restaurant or something like that. And then the real Kiarostami makes a film about this guy who has pretended to be him.
Yeah.
The whole thing is, you know, it's putting a rather boring man in between two mirrors and magnifying him to all eternity. It's just a bit boring, but a bit boring times two.
I've basically made an agreement with myself never to watch another one of his films because I think I've fallen asleep in everything of his that I've seen. So, boy, maybe we should be trying to talk about better courtroom films in order to try and make a case for courtrooms as being good, courtroom dramas as being cinema. But here's my overall take is that I think we talked about this a little bit in the last pod, that there's something very formulaic and very procedural about this very procedural art form or legal system. So they just strike me as anti-cinema entirely. But I think they do come out of the theater. I think it makes more sense as a theater piece. But I think also when you think about cinema, it sort of came... Something happened with early television because early television was very talky and very stagey. And then I think that was how theater sort of entered into the realm of film. And I don't think, you know, most players are not going to be very cinematic or very good movies. It happens occasionally with a lot of reworking. But I think they're just inherently hard to make visual. They're hard to do a lot of visual storytelling because you're depending so much on dialogue, which is, you know, kind of an enemy of cinema. You have to a certain amount of dialogue, of course, but not too much. I think people are suckered into it because there's this inherent drama of all these characters in one space and opposite sides by the very nature of the legal systems. And there's also this investigation. We like films that involve some kind of investigation where the protagonist is trying to get to the truth. So those two elements of the storytelling in terms of inherent drama and someone doing an investigation, that makes good drama and possible tension. But when you keep it sequestered – oh, that's a legal term, I believe. When you keep it sequestered in one space, it becomes very hard to make it really interesting visually. So I think – I'll make my case that that's my opening hypothesis is that's why I don't think most courtroom things make good films.
Okay, I'm going to parry your opening statement then with another courtroom movie, which I think avoids all of those pitfalls.
Okay.
So I've got a courtroom movie, which I think is good, although I haven't seen it for many years, on my list. Most of it, an awful lot of it does happening inside a courtroom during a hearing, but... it's very visual. It relies a lot on reconstructions. It plays with the notion of reality and what is reliable. Caused kind of quite a stir when it was originally released. I'd be interested to know what – I must watch this again. I'd be interested to see how it looks these days. The film I'm talking about is JFK.
Oh, yeah.
So you know, Oliver Stone's, you know, really big picture, which starred, you know, everyone from Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, Kevin Costner in the central role when Kevin Costner was still hot. Admittedly, the one overwhelming, overriding image I retain from my viewing of Kevin Costner was a naked Kevin Bacon, who kind of appears with all of his clothes off in some flashback to some kind of slightly strange sexual a party that he attends. But overriding that otherwise slightly odd image, JFK, kind of it's cinematically very playful, isn't it? You get the use of lots of different you know, film stock, and some of it's color and some of it's black and white, and different lenses and different optical effects. And the whole thing combines into this kind of quite strange, almost kind of hallucinatory feud. Mm. When I watched it, it was at the cinema and a midnight showing. And it's like 3.5 hours, isn't it? So I think we ended up getting out at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And I was a kind of a bit dazed and didn't quite know which way was up emerging from JFK. Yeah. I don't know how much of that was because it was 4 o'clock in the morning and how much of it because of the kind of the profound hallucinatory effect that the film has. For a film that's largely set in a courtroom, it goes to a lot of interesting, strange places, JFK.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it is surreal because he's cutting in so much. Does he recreate the Magruder footage, I think, of the assassination? Mm. He does a lot visually. It's almost a mixed media piece in some ways because he's using different, he's jumping time and space a bunch, and he's using different film stocks and video and all sorts of stuff. So I think...
And then Kevin Bacon takes his clothes off.
Oh, my God. Any film with Kevin Bacon. And you mentioned that Kevin, what's the other one? Kevin Costner? Keith Costner.
Kevin Costner.
Yeah. Are they both Kevins? Kevin Costner. Yeah. Oh, my God. You said he was hot. He's still hot. What are you talking about? That means smoking hot. Did you mean hot like a hot product in Hollywood?
Hot product. Hey, hot property. Yeah.
Anyway, so
I haven't seen Kevin Costner for last time I saw Kevin Costner on screen was in Man of Steel, the not very good Superman film from about 10 years ago. I have not seen him in anything since then. Yeah, is he still hot?
He's on television. I've never particularly liked Kevin Costner. So even the fact that you said he was hot is questionable to me.
That's ringing alarm bells already. Okay.
again, on that one, I guess I would argue that is he's working really hard not to make it a courtroom drama, isn't he? So I guess that's, again, I would say that's actually an argument for the prosecution.
No.
To a certain extent, yeah.
You're snatching all my best arguments.
Well, no, I'm unprepared, so I'm just kind of grabbing at straws. But the more I think about it, the more I feel, and I'm sure you do too. You're being a good egg on the other side there by trying to defend it. But 12 Angry Men, again, I don't think of as courtroom. Maybe you just have to do something really special with it, or have a really special protagonist or character. So there's one film on the list here which I really do love. I have a lot of mixed feelings about it, but To Kill a Mockingbird, I think, is fantastic because Gregory Peck's character is fantastic, and it's the legal system seen through the eyes of a young child, and it definitely tackles race issues, even though there's a lot of white savior stuff going on, but I think it just ends up being a good film, and there's a lot that happens before you learn a lot about the case before they actually get into the trial, but then the trial scenes are good, but they're not dominant. They don't really soak up the whole film. There's a good fair bit that happens before and some good coda stuff. Basically the third act, or maybe the last half of the third act, happens after the courtroom drama. So I think that one stands out as being a pretty good example of something that's prosecution worthy. It's definitely on your list of neither prosecution nor defense, but I think it's definitely prosecution. Witness for.
Now, isn't there some contemporary controversy about, or that word again, about To Kill a Mockingbird?
Well, the book for sure. I've seen the film again recently, so I remember being not as happy with the film as I was as a kid. I've seen that film probably 5-6 times by this point, and I remember it not being as strong as I thought it was, but you definitely see it with the new eyes as we have more post-racial reckonings going on, or can you say post-racial reckoning? A racial reckoning going on.
Yeah, we ain't post-racial yet. We're working on it.
We ain't there yet. It doesn't age very well. A lot of this stuff doesn't age very well. But I think it's still a strong performance from Gregory Peck. He's a great character. I know that on the American Film Institute list of 100 great protagonists. He's up there, probably number one or within the top five. He'll probably lose a few places, but he is a good character, and it is it's a good story. And it does, yeah. I think the court stuff is pretty compelling in that film.
Well, point of order from the Two Real Book Club.
Yes, yes.
Have you read Go Set a Watchman?
That is Harper Lee's follow-up, right?
The one that she didn't want to publish or didn't want to write was kind of sort of... Either she kind of sort of wrote it, wasn't happy with it, or her family kind of strongly encouraged her to write it because they quite liked the idea that there might be some money involved.
Yeah, of course. When was it written, though? Was it close to the original book, or was it written many years later?
I'm relying on your superior literary knowledge here. I don't know.
And you are relying on an unreliable witness here.
Oh, don't worry. I'll edit that part out of the podcast
later.
Please
make me look foolish. I feel like it wasn't written in the early 60s or late 50s when she wrote the To Kill a Mockingbird, but I don't know that, because she by the time it came out, she was... probably in her 80s.
Yeah.
And there's some questions about how much she really remembered and what her state of mind was at that time. So how well she could explain it. I don't think she did many interviews, period. So.
Right.
But you have read it.
No, I haven't read it.
Oh.
So okay. As always, I'm relying on your superior literary knowledge.
Forget about it. This is another one of those moments where we're talking on the podcast about something neither one of us has experienced. We need to get out of here fast.
I'll tell you what, I kind of come back to my defense then.
Please.
Courtroom movies can be good. 90s movie, bit zeitgeisty, Jodie Foster, Kelly McGillis, both, kind of, well, not necessarily playing against type, but at least not spreading their wings a little bit. The Accused, have you seen that?
I think I saw it in the 80s, so I'm surprised you said
in the
90s.
80s. Was it a song? So maybe it was the 80s.
I'll look it up. I have seen it. Great performance from Jodie Foster, worthy of winning awards, which she did. 1988.
That film does rely for some of its dramatic impact on a pretty harrowing reconstruction.
Yeah.
But there are also a lot of courtroom scenes which are based around that as well. So there is more to the film than just the reconstruction.
Okay, so true story also, which kind of links it with Anatomy of a Murder in the sense that it's strong because the actual source material is true.
And it does highlight one of the advantages of courtroom movies, which is that you can get to the real nitty-gritty of zeitgeisty issues.
Yeah.
Without having to kind of dance around, you can talk about things and call them what they are.
Yeah.
You can analyze the ups and the downs, right there on screen. Mm-hmm. Whether it is cinematic is another question.
Yeah.
But I think the Accused, is there a cinematic moment that I can remember from The Accused? I'm not sure that there is. Mm. I can remember a pleasing little montage of Kelly McGillis working through the night, which was one of the moments when I think I decided I definitely never wanted to be a lawyer. So I became a doctor instead. Go figure. But
I love sleeping. I love sleeping when you're supposed to sleep, yeah.
it was certainly a film that had a big emotional impact.
Yep.
And I think probably a big cultural impact as well.
Yeah. I remember a lot of the exposition, the flashbacks take place in the bar and the pool table. That's what I remember. That's and again, a really closed space, but very... very cinematic.
I think so. I think I seem to recall for that reconstruction scene, they just put the camera on a tripod, a good sort of 3 or 4 yards away from the action, and let it all play out.
As a witness, yeah.
Which is probably the right way, isn't it? To shoot that kind of scene, but it's very effective.
I think what strikes me, having talked about this with really no expertise whatsoever for the last few minutes.
Why change the habit of a lifetime?
Courtroom stuff is all exposition, isn't it? And we really rail against exposition as screenwriters and filmmakers. Whereas it's all about finding out what has already happened. So you're sort of doing something very contrarian to good cinema, which is you're just dealing with exposition as opposed to exploring present-day drama and present-day tensions. So there's something anti-cinematic in that sense, that you're telling a story that someone already knows and you're trying to get it from other people's perspectives. So that is something inherently wrong with the form, I guess.
But that same characteristic, I think, makes the form appeal to great actors.
Mm.
The other film, the fourth film I've got on my list of why, my witness for the defense, my list of why courtroom movies are good, is a real dynamite film that features the man who I think may be the greatest living screen actor still working today, who is Daniel Day-Lewis. In The Name of the Father, I put on my list. Jim Sheridan film, again from early 90s, was it?
Yeah.
Pete Postlethwaite, Daniel Day-Lewis, about a miscarriage of justice. There's not a great many courtroom scenes in that film, but there's certainly plenty of drama. And Daniel Day-Lewis absolutely hammers it.
Yeah.
Great film. Very cinematic.
And an actor who, I'm going to counter immediately, and an actor who keeps retiring. How many times has he retired? So to say that it attracts great actors, these are actors who don't even want to act anymore. I would also argue a lot of that takes place in prison. I remember the prison stuff much more vividly than the courtroom stuff. So, and maybe there'll be a future pod about prisons as being cinematic or not. But I think that's more of a prison drama, and it's really interesting. Is Peter Postlethwaite plays his father? Is that right?
He does, yeah.
Yeah, so he's in prison with his father, which brings in this whole other layer. I just think Jim Sheridan's such a great director and a great storyteller that it really benefits from him being at the helm. Is that based on source material that you've read, of course?
Well, so it may well be, but I haven't read it yet.
Okay.
If we queue it up for the pod, I'll read it. Jim Sheridan made The Fields, didn't he? Is that right?
I think so, yeah. Which we saw last year.
Yeah, which is another magnificent kind of late 80s, early 90s feature film.
Unfortunately, it starts with The, and I had just Googled The Accused, so now I'll be able to get The Field 1990. Who directed? A little slow there. Jim Sheridan. Yeah.
See, if this was a real court, then you would have some kind of clerk who would look that up for you, wouldn't
you? Yeah. Honestly, didn't Daniel Day-Lewis did some films with him? He did My Left Foot is Jim Sheridan, I believe.
Ah, yes. God, Jim Sheridan had a great run.
Oh, my God.
In that kind of mid to late 80s and early 90s. That was a great run.
Absolutely. Fantastic director. So that would help. Now, Sidney Lumet, did he do The Verdict? Is that a Sidney Lumet film?
The Verdict was a Sidney Lumet film, yes.
I barely remember. Again, that's my youth. I remember that one as being very much about Paul Newman as a character. I guess obviously a lot happens in the courtroom too, but it's more of a character piece. And again, one of these down on his luck, kind of alcoholic.
Yeah, washed
poor,
up.
Poor lawyers. Boy, maybe that's a remake of Anatomy of Murder as well. Jeez.
One of the other films that I put on my list. So I bravely put a few films which I haven't seen. My Cousin Vinny, which is commonly cited by real lawyers as the film which gets the most things right about the legal system. Yeah. My Cousin Vinny. I suppose maybe because it just points a finger at how ridiculous the legal system is.
Yeah.
But I've never seen My Cousin Vinny. I've never seen The Verdict. I've never seen A Few Good Men, even though I used a little quote from it in the jingle for Tell Me Why on the podcast. The only other film from my list here, which I would like to big up, which I think will come to my aid defending the notion that courtroom movies are good, is Erin Brockovich.
Yeah.
Steven Soderbergh movie with Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
Through the length of her career, she was just such a watchable star.
Sure.
She is tremendously watchable, playing kind of, a bit down at heel, kind of working class. She's kind of barely even a paralegal, isn't she?
Yeah.
But she's just she's a kind of bright and motivated woman who helps Albert Finney on this kind of big class action suit. The reason that the film is named after her is because the film is all about her character rather than what happens in the courtroom.
Yeah.
And in fact, I rather think that don't they settle and don't even go to court at the end of Erin Brockovich?
I believe that's true, So wait, are you saying again that you're using a non-court film to argue that court films are good?
I think you may have discovered the weakness in my argument, yes.
Well, I think, I think there has to be some other element, and that in sort of the last two films we talked about, like Paul Newman's interesting to, as a character, he's interesting to learn about. Aaron Brockovich is a, I think that's a David and Goliath thing just as much as it's a, Davida and Goliath piece as much as it is a courtroom piece. So I'm going to mention one thing that you probably have never seen, and
oh, good.
I forget if the namesake soap opera came after or before, but there's a film called Peyton Place, which I think reminded me a little bit of Anatomy of a Murder, because it does also involve sexual assault or rape, I guess. I don't remember it well, but it's one of these things that black and white, saw it on cable TV a bunch when I was a kid, and it really left an indelible mark on me because it's really about community as well. It's about this small town where something horrific happens, and then the courtroom scenes are poignant and they really are effective. So I would recommend that for people, but that's based on like the 12-year-old me. I haven't seen it in a long, long time, but I think it's good. I think it holds up. And hey, anything that spawns or concludes a classic soap opera, yeah, you can't lose there.
In this country, soap opera means Coronation Street.
Yes,
I don't know whether you've ever seen that, but.
And I've seen a few thousand episodes, and that's not even the beginning.
But not quite as glamorous as Peyton Place. With all our extremely elaborate legal arguments, have we managed to prove that courtroom drama is dull or exciting?
Oh, do we have to come to the verdict, right?
I think we have to come to a verdict, don't we? Yeah, even Anatomy of a Fall came to a verdict, even if they couldn't quite bear to tell you whether she'd really done the crime or not. We have to come to a verdict.
Yeah.
Which way are you going to vote?
I'm going to vote dull, and then just once in a while someone manages to pull it off, and that's impressive. I think that's an impressive feat if you can actually make one really compelling and feel different. I think the biggest problem is that they all feel the same because, as we've mentioned, it depends on formula, in part because various legal systems have their formulas. And it might be a little different between a British system or the French system or the American system, but they all follow a formula. And as a result, it's hard to really make one stand out. That is my verdict.
I'm going to have to agree with you simply because you have cleverly proven to me that all of the movies that I wrote down on my list of courtroom movies are good, are only good because of the bits that don't happen in the courtroom.
Yes, that's it.
So it turns out you are right. These courtroom movies are dull and uncinematic.
I know. And I'm a terrible lawyer because I was very unprepared. I winged it and I win.
You still won the case. That makes you a brilliant lawyer.
Well, as in many cases, it was just the tossing of the coin. That's what decided it, basically. I got the easy part. Should I hit the gavel again?
Yeah, go on. That's the most exciting bit. Oh, you seem so masterful when you do that.
What does that mean?
Now that we've come to our verdict, we can flick our jury members into the bin and go and see a proper film.
Case closed.